It's Thursday, and it's time to talk to the voice of the Jayhawks here on the Sports Ticket, brought to you each and every Thursday by our fine friends at Anderson Insurance Agency, where they do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Millen Boulevard, or call them at 738-5701. Brian Haney jamming out to that intro. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, doing well, Wade. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Always enjoy it. Let's jump in. Tough week in Norman for KU last weekend, of course, losing 62-9, but once again playing shorthanded.
Yeah, you know, and you always want to be careful and coming on each week talking about this because I don't want folks to think we're making excuses. Mm-hmm. But, man, when the did-not dress list comes out and you're without your two best defensive linemen, you're without arguably your best offensive lineman, and you've got all these freshmen having to try and block what David Lawrence called the best Oklahoma pass rush he's seen in 20 years. Obviously, you know, in the trenches, you're going to really be overmatched. And they would have been anyway, even with their first stringers, but now you're really under a microscope in the most glaring of ways. And call it like it is, you know, whether you played football or you just watched it all your life, anybody knows if you can't block, you can't do anything.
Yeah.
You got no chance. And Kansas gave up an Oklahoma school record 9 sacks. The quarterback was running for his life. And, you know, a lot of this was set in motion by the guys that weren't there due to the did-not-dress list and contact tracing and all that. And then you couple that with, you know, departures in previous weeks to your best offensive and defensive individuals and Puka Williams and Drew Prox. And it's adding up to be clearly, you know, a lost season in terms of Kansas being able to compete for wins, but not a lost season in terms of investing in the future. And if there's any silver lining in all these games in which they've been down to their third or fourth string at certain spots, it's the fact that 37 total true freshmen on this roster, many of those are getting a chance to play. And on Saturday, when a guy like Will Huggins, who's a tight end prospect out of Shawnee Mission South in the Kansas City area, that's had a career breakout. And Luke Grimm, for the second consecutive week, posts career numbers and catches and receiving yards. And it's little things like that that I know doesn't get the fan base that fired up because you want to see winning, you want to see competitive play. But in a season where I would contest Kansas has been hit harder than any other Big 12 school when it comes to the players and their head coach that has been affected by COVID, it really has led to an imbalance that already was there to begin with. I mean, this was the preseason 10th place team, right? But now, just an insurmountable talent gap. However, you're still going to play the game for the full 60 minutes. You're still going to put guys out on the field. And the good news is the guys that are getting reps, as we've talked about many times, it's not counting against them in terms of their scholarship eligibility this year. And they're getting invaluable game experience that hopefully pays dividends in the future. So that's how you got to look at it. I know that's the same song and dance you're hearing every week from me, but that's the reality of our situation. And when you have a roster with 67 underclassmen and 37 total true freshmen, it's going to be some growing pains and it's going to be some blowouts like we saw on Saturday. But the good news is these kids are still fighting hard. They're competing, and that shows that they're bought in and they're buying what their coach is selling. And I just hope we can see that for 3 more weeks because the last couple of games are a lot more in your wheelhouse than some of these games over the last few weeks, particularly last Saturday. So let's hope for some more competitive results down the stretch. And when it's all said and done, we can look back on it and say, okay, you know, we didn't win as much as we would have liked, but look at all these guys that really grew up and had a chance to fast-track their collegiate development by playing in a season that normally, you know, other teams, other freshmen previous years wouldn't have a chance to sniff the field. So that's the one thing we got to hold out hope on.
I feel for Jalen Daniels. I mean, he just recently turned 18, and he just didn't have a chance this last game. I mean, sacked 9 times. Isn't it really hard to grade a kid when you're running for your life?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I think that Jalen, in a honest film session, would tell you that some of the instances in which he got sacked, the ball could have come out quicker. Mm-hmm. He could have made a faster read and got loose of it. But let's be real. I mean, he's running for his life most every other time. And many times you can't even say rock chalk before he's got a guy breathing down his neck. And it was tough to watch. You know, I think if I'm being honest with you, of my 5 years back at the Voice of the Jayhawks, that was probably the toughest game that David and I have had a chance to call together. We're always super positive, and we remain super positive and look for the silver linings even on Saturday. But when you can't block, like I said, and it's just a domination in the trenches to where your quarterback's running for his life, you can't expect to accomplish anything. I think heading into that last drive of the game in mop-up duty, when we finally scored, we were 3 of 19 on third downs, and that's how little we were sustaining drives and how quickly we were having to get off the field because we just couldn't get any type of protection. And that was difficult to see because he is our future. He is the best rising stock that we've got in our portfolio right now. And so you want to see him protected, but they're going to do all they can to hopefully be whole again, not just with the COVID contact tracing, but other situations that make them a much more first-string type offensive line coming out of the bye week versus Texas. And then there's some things that they can do schematically and that Jalen himself, quite frankly, can do to read it quicker, get it out hotter, and not be taking so many hits. So I'm optimistic that that's going to look different. But for that one night, when you're talking about a program with the illustrious history of Oklahoma and matching their school record in sacks allowed, or in their case, sacks obtained, boy, you don't want to be on the other end of that stat, and especially when you have such a valuable commodity to protect the future at the position that you've been searching for a decade. That really was difficult. But I give him a ton of credit. You know, he's fearless, he's relentless, he's tough as nails, and he kept getting up and just kept popping right back in the huddle. And obviously he was ultimately lifted at the end. Thankfully it wasn't as bad as it looked on the field, and Coach fully expects that he's going to be ready for Texas. If you look at the comments he made on Monday on the Big 12 teleconference. Last night he was a little more coy. I asked him about it, and he gave me this really theatrical, dramatic, like long drawn out head turn, like, "Don't you dare ask me that question. Texas might be listening." You know, and it was kind of funny. We had some laughs over that. But I think deep down, you know, that they're fully expecting him to be there, and they just want to keep Texas on their toes, wondering who it might be. So good news is that nothing serious came of it. Bad news is that's a night that Jalen will probably want to forget more so than any other in his career. But I think those types of nights fuel your fire, and they make you appreciate the good and the fruitful success once it comes later. And I promise you, it is coming eventually for Jalen Daniels.
KU with the bye week this week. They will be hosting Texas next week at 2:30. We'll talk more about that matchup next Thursday with the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky at 118 North Millen Boulevard, or call them at 738-5701. Let's turn our attention to the basketball team. KU ranked 6th in the preseason poll. Gonzaga ranked number 1. KU is supposedly going to play Gonzaga in Fort Myers on November the 25th. That's not a better way to kick off the basketball season, huh?
Yeah, no kidding. And to be honest, when they first started talking about this, I didn't think that the Zags would be number 1. I thought that we'd both be flirting with the top 5 and maybe they're top 3 and we're top 6. But then the AP poll comes out and actually has Gonzaga ahead of Baylor, which was a big surprise. And maybe we're Big 12 biased, but I just really thought Baylor would be number 1 with a bullet once Jared Butler decided to come back. So the fact that you get to open with the number 1 team in the country, the fact that you have two programs that were everybody's favorites to make it to the Final Four last year before COVID, even though these are different teams and they both lost star players, obviously, the fact that that's your season opening matchup, boy, that kind of feels like the Champions Classic, right? And we're still going to get the Champions Classic, and it looks like we'll be in Indy the next week for that. But to open in what was a reshuffling of the deck to have any kind of action, to open with something that good in an area that isn't the Orlando bubble and it's not going to Maui, but it's still a pretty cool place, Fort Myers, Florida. Sunshine, you know, gorgeous weather, and great basketball. And that really could not have worked out better for Kansas. So we'll learn a lot about this team in, you know, what will be roughly a 5-day stretch in which you take on Kentucky on the end of the Gonzaga St. Joseph's Fort Myers games. And so, wow, I mean, what a litmus test in your first week to have two games that big. That's as tough as anybody will face in the country. And hopefully for this Kansas team that came out 6th in the poll themselves, it's a chance to prove worthy of that ranking and maybe even prove worthy of a ranking even higher.
And Marcus Garrett, of course, coming back. He's top returner at KU. Of course, KU's got some, you know, they always have outstanding talent coming back, even if they lose. We know how it is. KU reloads, they don't rebuild. But Marcus getting a lot of attention, rightfully so.
Yeah, he's a guy that, you know, honestly deserves everything he gets, not just as the National Defensive Player of the Year, but as a guy that now will have the reins to a basketball team that has national title expectations, and he is the perfect guy to take over for Devon Dotson and be the extension of Bill Self on the floor. We've talked about this. I mean, he has a mindset and the way he sees the game that is as close to the way Bill Self thinks and sees it as any player Self has coached. And so when you're talking about transitional, you know, opportunity from Devon Dotson, a potential first-round draft pick, a point guard, to now, you know, a senior point guard that, you know, has been more of a complement and not the main facilitator, honestly, this couldn't have gone any better. I mean, think about it. When Dotson took over for Devontae Graham, you're taking over for a 23-year-old senior with an 18-year-old true freshman. In this case, while Dotson's going to be really tough to replace, it's a situation where, you know, you've got a 22-year-old that's been in the program, that's hit big shots, that's made huge stops, and he's not going to bat an eye at what additional is being put on his plate. So I think what we see from him this year will be a much more complete player, not just the guy that has the defensive reputation, but a guy that is going to score in double figures, not, you know, filling it up with a ton of jump shots, but we'll see that great Marcus Garrett slashing and driving that we've come to know and love the last couple of seasons, with honestly a lot more the free throw line, because he'll be the guy now when the shot clock's dripping down and you got to go make a play, he'll be what Dotson was. Question is, can he hit 70%+ of his free throws and cash in on some of those additional opportunities? Because to me, you'll see the assist numbers go up because the ball's going to be in his hands more. You'll see points per game obviously go up, but also free throws. And so if he can make all those, you know, real positive ascensions, because you know the defense is going to be there. And I really don't worry that the additional offensive responsibilities will creep into his defense. The only thing that it might is that because he's so important now as the floor general, maybe he takes one or two fewer chances a game when he's trying to go Oliver Twist on you and pick your pocket. Mm-hmm. He's still going to be all up in your grill so close you can smell his breath, but he might not reach and poke and prod quite as much unless they really have to have it in a key juncture and he's only got one or two fouls at that point, because you just don't have Devon anymore to where you can take quite as many chances. But if anything, I think he's just going to be even better 1 year deeper into his development, and he's still got those same great defensive instincts and quickness that have made him the nation's premier lockdown guy. So I think somebody on social media made a cool Instagram graphic that called him Agent Lockdown. And I thought that's pretty cool. Agent Lockdown.
I like it.
And that's really what he is. I mean, can you think of a better guy that in the entire 18 years of Bill Self that you'd put out there to shut down or lock down the opponent's top shooter, top scorer? There's not a single guy that I would put over Marcus Garrett. I mean, obviously, Travis Rutherford was a really good lockdown guy on the perimeter, and there's other examples. Surprisingly, Bill Self would tell you Brady Morningstar is, you know, one of the guys on that list. And I say surprisingly because some folks might not think that he passed the eyeball test as much as a Garrett or a Rutherford would, you know, based on the muscular frame or all that. But I mean, he was really, really good fundamentally and really, really good instinctively. And yet, as good as those two guys are, and Garrett's the number one choice, hands down. So you bring that back, and like you said, the accolades are starting to roll in. 10th in the preseason AP All-American voting, and I think he's got a chance to definitely finish right there. I don't know if he's a first-team All-American, but I think that would put you in the second-team All-American distinction, and what a career that would be.
Yeah.
If he winds up being a Defensive Player of the Year and eventually an All-American. For a guy that, you know, was a top 60 or 70 talent, but it didn't have the McDonald's All-American hype, even though he was the Texas Player of the Year. That'd be one heck of a career when it's all said and done. Let's hope he plays to that level this year.
Yeah, I agree with you. Okay, one last thing before we get to the off-the-wall question. I've been reading a few things. It sounds like Devon Dotson, Udoka Azubuike, they've done some good things in combines and so forth in preparation for the draft. Are you hearing any rumblings as to where these guys may go now that we're only 6 days away from the NBA draft?
Man, I wish I had some kind of great scoop like Boston and Toronto. I'm hearing whispers, man. They're making phone calls, but the reality of the situation is so much changes on draft night. So many times a guy slides, and the team that you think was most flirtatious with you or most enamored based on the dialogue ends up having a guy fall in their lap, and that causes you to slide. Or in other cases, you know, maybe one of these guys, it just takes one team, right? It just takes one team that thinks you're the fit. Maybe they leap up into the back end of the first round higher than where many are projecting. It's so tough. And this has been the draft where we've had the most time to really dissect these guys, even though some of the workout opportunities have been fewer based on the pandemic. But typically, you know, these guys only have a couple of months between the end of their college seasons and the NBA draft. And in this case, they've been waiting for a long time. And so I'm reading all the same articles you are, Wade, and yet I can't get a consensus of are they middle of the second? Could one of them be at the end of the first? We know Udoka just set combine records for centers and vertical leaps, and that's awesome. But will that be enough? I mean, it all depends on who those teams are drafting at the end of the first round if they truly need that position. I felt like exiting the season that maybe Doak would narrowly be the higher drafted prospect of the two, but it's all relative to who's picking where and what that franchise's needs are. So wouldn't surprise me at all if Devon ended up going ahead of Udoka. I think, you know, if Devon was honest, he'd tell you he'd be feeling so much better if he was 2 inches taller, you know,
because
his skill set and his work ethic and all that is awesome. He's got to prove he can be a better jump shooter and a more consistent shooter, because the blow-by finish at the rim stuff is going to be so much tougher at the NBA level with the big guys protecting the rim there and the faster, bigger guards that aren't nearly as easy to blow by. That's where his jump shot comes into play, and he probably wishes he was taller. Udoka probably wishes he had, you know, more of an offensive skill set besides the just back to the basket and alley-oop lob stuff. But he's proven more so than any guy I can think of in recent memory in terms of what he did to his body his last year and how he elevated himself on a completely different plane based on the weight he lost, the explosiveness he gained, and even his mental and emotional health. Yeah, this was a different guy. This was a happy guy. This was a, I want to be a leader. I want to, you know, show some personality. And to call it like it is, and this is probably getting a little bit deeper than you asked for on the question, but over his first three seasons, this is a kid that comes up at 16, okay? 17 and 18 years of age when he was really being leaned on. And he then had two season-ending injuries halfway around the world from his support system. And he's a year and a half, 2 years younger than most guys in his class. And it's no wonder that at times his body language left something to be desired, or at times it looked like he was moping. I would not have been nearly as mentally strong or upbeat as some were asking him to be if I was that young, if I was halfway around the globe for my parents and going through the tough luck injuries that he was dealt. But the guy we saw as a senior, and this is going to sound funny, but this is the honest truth, he was so proud of his body and all the great shape he got into, like a young Wade Gershner drawing those Tom Cruise comparisons.
Absolutely.
That his teammates would joke that he would walk around with his shirt off all the time because he was so proud of his six-pack.
Yeah.
And what I'm getting at is that it doesn't relate to the NBA draft position, but where it does relate is between the years, in his demeanor, in his body language, in his just overall, you know, mentality, he was a different guy. And that makes him, you know, much more, I think, draftable, likable. It obviously made him more dominant, a confident force that demanded the ball in some instances. Because over the first 3 years, that was not the Udoka that we came to know. And so I think when I look back on the guys I've covered over my career, both at Kansas and Texas Tech, in a one-year transformation, physically, mentally, and emotionally, I can't think of a guy that did more for himself to change the perception of what people thought versus what ended up being his legacy than Udoka Azubuike. And the only thing that's a shame is he was robbed of those six additional games in March Madness where he could have really, on a national stage, vaulted that reputation, because that would have been what catapulted him into definite first-round territory if KU makes a first-round run, or a Final Four run, I should say, where he's the focal point. That's a shame. But I still think he's got a great chance to slip into the back of the first. I'll be watching as anxiously as the rest of Jayhawk Nation, because it truly is one of those nights where, I mean, I saw Mock yesterday, as good as Devon's been in some of these workouts, he wasn't even one of the top 60. And then when you read that, you're like, okay, well, who's this writer? Where's his journalism degree from? You know, who's saying this?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
But that's how unpredictable I think this particular draft will be. So I would say anywhere from 25 to 60 is where these guys could go. And that's a huge range, but that's the current, you know, expectation of what's out there and how wide of a range it could be.
Well, and you don't know also how many players internationally be drafted. I think that's what always throws people off as well. And in regards to guys falling in the draft, you go back to Paul Pierce, who ended up being pretty decent. He dropped to 10 when a lot of people thought he'd be a top five pick. You know, in NFL, Aaron Rodgers, of course, the Packers picked him up and people thought they were nuts for picking up Aaron Rodgers, but he was available late in the first round and he used that as fuel and motivation and fire for the future. And that's worked out pretty well for, worked well for both Paul Pierce and Aaron Rodgers. They used that as extra motivation and intestinal fortitude and fuel, and I could see the same thing happening with Dotson and Azubuike as well. In regards to the taking the shirt off, I just want to clarify something. I never have been comfortable just ripping my shirt off in public or even in pickup basketball games. I always wanted to be wearing the shirts and be the shirts and not the skins, mainly because sometimes I felt like I kind of got cold in some of these gyms. But I will admit that that there are times where I like to wear a tank top or Under Armour workout shirt or something. And as my good friend, neighbor Logan, back in the day when he was hanging out with my oldest son, Noah Miller, whatever he's called, he would say, "Hey, you want to check out the gun show?" And then he'd flex. So, see, I like to show off the arms every once in a while. That's the part maybe I'm most proud of there. But there's no way in heck you're going to see me take my shirt off in front of anybody, okay, for the most part. I don't even know if at home I feel comfortable with it, because as you get older, as you will find out, or you already do, there's this thing called love handles, and those aren't exactly the greatest things to look at. Whereas these guys like Udoka and these athletes are absolutely chiseled, and I have to admit, I'm jealous. I wish I had 6, 12 packs, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, I'm fighting that aging decline daily. So I just turned 40 3 months ago, and I work at it really hard to not have it show too much, but I'll never have the Udoka confidence anymore.
No, sure. No way. I'd love to have that confidence. Part of that confidence would be great. All right, time for the off-the-wall question. All right, our listeners that were tuning in last week, they maybe remember that you were about to have a date, I believe, that night or the next day. Anything you want to share about your date last week at all, Brian Haney? Inquiring minds want to know.
She's a good girl. I think she's a keeper. We had a great time. Went to a fun local establishment down on Mass Street. It's different now in the midst of COVID. You know, a lot of places you have to sit outside, or you know, you're just talking to your waitress with masks on and all that. So it was our first time out on a quote unquote fancy date, and it was a little bit different. But we had fun, and she's a sweetheart, good looking girl, and we have, you know, just the absolute best conversations. Kind of like talking to you on Thursday mornings. Only, you know, she's, with all due respect, better for me to look at. So I mean, you're a good looking guy, but not exactly my type. So
yeah.
I prefer her, and we had another great night of just fabulous conversation and chemistry, and you know, I'm hopeful to see where it goes.
That's very awesome. Very awesome. Best of luck to both of you. And a side question off the wall, and the only reason I bring this up is my wife is a Ryan Gosling fan. Ryan Gosling just turned 40 today. He's the big 4-0. So see, now you, me, and Ryan have something in common. We're all 40 or older. After that, I don't think there's anything left to compare. Have you seen the movie The Notebook?
I have. And I've also seen... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, how would you... I have not seen that movie. How would you rate that movie on a scale of 1 to 10? What would you give it?
See, I actually like the sappier... romantic comedies, or in this case, romantic dramas.
Yes.
I'm kind of the girl when it comes to that. I'll admit that, because I tend to bare my soul on this show more so than any other show. So I actually really enjoyed The Notebook, and there's some good eye candy for the guys as well in that, with Rachel McAdams.
Yes.
But he's in another movie. What's the movie with, I want to say Steve Carell's in it too, and the beautiful redhead that she does like the scene out of... I've had the time of my life. You know what I'm talking about? She runs and jumps up into his arms, and he twirls her around in the air. You got to watch that with your wife. That's a great one, and I'm sorry. It's a terrible reference when I can't think of the title or the other actress's name. But your wife would love that scene, and I think that's one of the scenes beyond The Notebook that he's most famous for.
Uh-huh.
I would always have to talk about Ryan Gosling when I was in Lubbock, because everybody thought that Cliff Kingsbury was his doppelganger. And we would get
right.
that question all the time. Uh-huh. But make sure you Google what I'm talking about. Maybe Dusty can help me out here. If I could phone a friend right now, I could come up with this reference. But that's the one you got to watch this weekend. Since there's no KU football game, you got an open date. Take a couple hours and watch that one with your wife if she's a Gosling fan, because I think that's some of his better work as well.
What was the actor he was with? Who'd you say?
I think Steve Carell was in it,
Steve
too.
Steve Carell.
But he did not lift him in the air and throw him around. the beautiful redhead whose name also escaped me. I'm only good at remembering football back.
The name I thought of when you said redhead like that, I thought Emma Stone. Is that right?
Yes, Emma
Stone. Okay, yeah. Hold on a second. I'll get it. Crazy Stupid Love, is that it?
Yes!
We figured it out. I have not seen that one either, so I'll have to.
Oh yeah, you got to see it.
We're gonna
turn this into movie recommendations.
Yes.
Until we win a game, we're gonna turn this into movie recommendations.
Yes, we will. My wife and I will have a movie weekend when it's really bad winter wise outside, and 6 inches of snow or something. We'll watch those back to back, right?
All right, there you go.
I'll give you my grades and see if they match up with yours. Hey man, appreciate the time as always, and enjoy your weekend off from calling a football game. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good, buddy. Thanks a lot.
Take care, man. Brian Haney, the voice of GX. He's the best, and we appreciate him every Thursday. Brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.